Okay, anyway, so what I'm looking at here is Keynes within the framework of a history of economic thought, but not just to tell that history of economic thought, but to, I hope, show some insight into what he's doing, and to show him within a context which is this tradition that he was a part of. Keynes, of course, did present a history of economic thought, which I describe as a bad history. What he does is just say that everything before him was basically impractical, abstract and impractical. So his use of abstract is in terms of impracticality. Obviously, economics needs abstraction. But he's referring here to something that is impractical, heartless as well, this kind of thing. And so he's got harsh words for Ricardo, for example, which I'll be talking about. And I don't think this is a helpful history of economic thought. And it hides and obscures certain aspects of Keynes, I think, himself. So I'm presenting a history here. And in another way, it's an alternative to Polanyi's Great Transformation. He presents a kind of history of economic thought, or one is implied in his work, which is based on this notion of the of fictitious commodity, and the fictitious commodity that would be relevant to this story would be labour power. The core explanation for this history that I'm presenting here is the independent labourer. This enables a more positive vision of the history leading up to Keynes. So Keynes, typical Whig fashion, they all got it wrong. Here I am, I'm sorting it out. I think anybody who's read Keynes is aware of that sweep of the arm he's got across history. And of course it's always insightful in some way, but the moment one starts looking at it, one has problems. So the core explanation here that I'm looking at is the independent labourer. This is the basis of, as I say, of a meaningful history, something that's got more a more positive angle to it. So it starts off with a positive note. This is about something. Once we've got a story that is about something, we can talk about its rise, its kind of consolidation, and its decline and fall. And I'm dealing here then with three periods: Ricardo, classical school, the classical period, Marshall, neoclassical, Keynes, what do you call that, the Keynesian period? I'm not sure. Welfare period, welfare state. Of course, then that gets into the neoclassical synthesis, and I suspect there's quite a few people here who don't think Keynes has much to do with that. So in examining Ricardo, Marshall and Keynes, we can observe what I call a coherent change of mind. This, of course, stretches a point, because there is no single mind. We're dealing with a tradition. But it is a tradition that has some coherence in itself. Marshall reflects on Ricardo. Keynes reflects on Marshall and Ricardo. So we do have something that's joined together. They have to observe what the other ones have said and develop from those points. Keynes can't just suddenly come up with something new out of nowhere. And I'm sure a lot of you will know that his comment on classical, what he calls classical economics, which is basically everything before him, he says there's nothing wrong with its logic. So he's doing something else. Okay, that's what he says. So he's adding to this history. He has to work out a strategy to add to this history, to produce the general theory to replace or to surround that particular theory, as he would think of it. Okay. But there's another thing that makes this a coherent change of mind, and that's the material that is being dealt with. And that material is the independent labourer and the conditions under which this independent labourer exists. So we see three periods, which roughly I will call emergence, consolidation, and rescue consolidation. So that's Ricardo, Marshall, Keynes. I'm not sure if these are very good words, but those are the ones I'm using at the moment. Emergence, consolidation, rescue, consolidation. So emergence, we're dealing with the emergence then of freedom, of independence. And this has to be seen then in the context of escape from, getting out of paternalism, old corruption. And here the aim is the production of a worker who regulates their own affairs. Occasionally you will see, if you're following these... Oh, it's gone off. Right, we'll start that again. You don't have to look at it, as I said, but there we go. Occasionally you'll see quotes that refer to things like regulating your own affairs. So we've got then a move from status to contract. Paternalism, old poor laws, aristocracy, etc., to a condition of freedom, regulating your own affairs, contract. When we're talking about regulating our own affairs, or in fact, the thing is always there because they're talking about the working class, we're talking about a move from looking up for a remedy, looking elsewhere for remedy, to looking to yourself for remedy for your ills. We're also talking here about a move from reform to policy. Reform, I'm using that to refer to breaking down old corruption, changing the constitution, which I'll talk about some more. Policy comes in after that with Marshall and Keynes, policies to secure certain objectives within the framework that has already been produced by reform. Now, you could argue about those words, but somehow I've got to make a distinction. Another aspect here, we're moving from the long run, that is Keynes, that's delete that bit. We're going from the long run, which is Ricardo, where the short run is the realm of privilege, the aristocracy. So the long run has a political content. To Marshall, where we have the short run and the long run. So you've got an apparatus for analysing policy. So we're talking about, if you like, micro-policy, interventions of various kinds. He's, at one point, talks about taxation, in terms of incentives, etc. And does taxation interfere with incentives and looking at consumer surplus and stuff like that? So that's Marshall, and then we move on to Keynes, and Keynes is defiantly and absolutely short run. Okay, and here the framework is for securing the assumptions of economic policy, and a key assumption, of course, is total output, which enables then people to choose. Okay, another aspect here is the form of the wage, which I will summarise in this manner, that it goes from ration, which is the old poor law, you're paid essentially, as Senior says, according to your wants, to the wage, which I'll call a unified wage or an enterprise wage, and then on to the divided wage. So that's from old poor law under paternalism, old corruption, that's ration. And then Ricardo and the classicals, it's the unifying of the wage, getting rid of the bounty, as they call it, removing the compound wage, is what Thomas Chalmers calls it, and moving on then after that to this division of the wage as a result of recognition of problems in the market, poverty and unemployment. Okay, Ricardo. Well, in a sense, I've said already a lot about that. We're talking about the emergence from legal constraint, from artificial economy, from status. We're talking about the move to hunger, natural economy, contract. But this was also related to themes of efficiency, improvement, morality, and remedy in yourself. Okay? So Ricardo's idea, which I will cut fairly short, is that you free the workers from the poor laws. Once you free the workers from the poor laws, they're working for a wage, they're working for self-improvement. Once you do that, you can allow them to vote. You can gradually extend the vote as they learn that laissez-faire encourages accumulation, and accumulation is the source of the demand for labour. So you end up with this wonderful system where, for Ricardo, the wage goes up and down simultaneously. It goes up in terms of use values and down in terms of value. As it goes down in terms of value, profit goes up. It's a miracle. Okay? That's Ricardo. So, give them the vote. And then there are discussions in Ricardo about, for example, trustee savings banks. Why? Because if you remove the poor laws, people are subject to self-remedy. How do they do that? Trustee savings banks, for example. But as he says, poor law reform leads to prudence and forethought, the future. So we're introducing the future, which does not happen in a condition of want alone. That is the ration. Well, the freedom is not, the future is not freed. Okay, so what does all this depend on? Of course, what it all depends on is that people can choose. They're able to choose in some way, so improvement means something. A key aspect of improvement is not just that you're doing better, but your character is improving. If you are the person making the decisions, then your behaviour depends on your decisions. And the makeup of your decisions over time becomes what we call character. And of course, character, if you go and look at any Victorian literature, character is the whole thing. Well, I'm exaggerating, but I've got to be quick. Okay, so what you get when you get to Marshall, pick up the principles, he starts talking about character, formation of character. He was in the Charity Organisation Society, whose main idea was character. For Marshall, then, this issue of character was central. Associated with that, moral and economic conditions were intertwined. There wasn't an economic and then you add on a moral, and there wasn't a moral and then you add on an economic. He saw these things as intertwined, and he saw them as intertwined because the key agent here is the independent labour. And that independent labour is not a consumer, not some kind of abstracted agent. It is a person living their life, having to make decisions in the market. And when you're making decisions in the market, you're making decisions about the future. And the moment you're making decisions about the future, morality comes in. Think of the temptations of sin. They are usually immediate. Okay, so an example of the intertwining of moral and economic, physical work. Here you are, just the ordinary economic activity. What does Marshall say about it? He describes it as a key aspect of it being moral. And of course, if you've done any physical work, you know, actually a load of it is moral, because it's very easy to do a bit of work, look like you're working, and you've done it. I can see. It's what the Poor Law Report calls boondoggling. Boondoggling is an activity you can't work out whether they're doing nothing or working. And if you can perfect that, well, anyway, some people say that that's what the Soviet Union was, a great mass of boondoggling. And I rather think it's somewhat the case. Anyway, if you're holding a spanner, are you working? It's a good question. That's one of my offcuts, which I'm not going to go on to now. Okay, so another thing here, he distinguishes between the standard of comfort and the standard of life. Now, we have to be aware of how he thinks of this. The standard of comfort is, if you like, you've got a sofa, we'll have another one, put that over there. It's a material improvement. That's not his aim. His aim is the standard of life. And the standard of life includes improvement of the person. So, the standard of life is essentially in some way moral. And it's about activity. In fact, he says that it's about want related to activity. It's not just meeting needs, because in the material sense, it's a much broader and wider thing. So there's a moral element to it. A part of that, then, also, is that one of the keys here, as he says, is that what modern society is characterized by is deliberateness, not selfishness. Okay. Deliberateness, not selfishness. And that deliberateness takes us back to the independent labourer. This is somebody who's been freed to make their own decisions about their activity. Okay. I'm going to have to cut that short because I've got 5 minutes and I haven't even started on Keynes. So, basic problem in Marshall is that the ideal regulation of your own affairs is that character goes to circumstance. If you regulate your own affairs, where you end up is down to you. This is the independence. You don't call to anybody else and say, why did my life go like that? Because they just say back to you, well, look at yourself. That's character to circumstance. The moment Marshall coming in, he's talking about poverty. And when he's talking about poverty, this is not some material condition, obviously that's important, it's where circumstance leads to character. And that's what he's trying to deal with. That's what the principles essentially is all about. It's how you deal with poverty. The deadening of faculties, degradation of mankind, etc., humankind, of course. And then how do you deal with that? This is where economics comes in. It comes in to decide practicable policies. He doesn't want socialism because that'll destroy the springs of vigour. Somehow or other, you've got to preserve this efficiency, preserve the individuality, so you need economists. And they've got their apparatus, short run, long run, marginal productivity. I'm sure you'll know all about that. But anyway. Okay, so I'll now finish off on Keynes. Hopefully the shortness of the Keynes bit, because I've left it, is okay, because some of you have done a bit of Keynes, I hope. All right. So what's hidden in Marshall? In Marshall, the problem is underemployment. Of course, once you deal with that, another problem is revealed, unemployment. And the key thing here is voluntary or involuntary. And if you look at Keynes, you will find a definition in there of voluntary unemployment, which is near enough the natural rate of unemployment. Which, I mean, it's just amazing. This is the non-Keynesian idea, and yet there it is. He's talking about it. So he does say that particular workers can price themselves into work. Fine. But what we've got here, of course, is the fire exit problem. When we all try and price ourselves back into work, we all get rammed into that fire exit. When is a fire exit? Not a fire exit, when everybody's trying to get out of it. And that's the problem with the wages. So you have a problem then, as he says, it's not the particular wage, it's the wage in general. And to cut a long story short here, he confronts the generality from the beginning, because first of all, the problems of the British economy, it's gone into a historic decline, so it's already a general problem. Then you've got the gold standard problem, and of course 1925 was it, I think, going back on the gold standard, and then again it's a generality, because the adjustment is moved on to all wages, it's not particular wages, and you've got the whole problem of flexibility. So that's again a political problem, but it's also a general problem. Everybody is confronted by it at the same time. It's not a matter of one worker pricing themselves back into work. Okay, right. And then, of course, the Great Depression, crash 29. To begin with, Keynes is thinking this is fantastic. Basically, he's thinking he's knocking out the Americans, allowing the British back in. And pretty soon he realises this is a world depression. So now the issue of flexibility takes on a, if you like, a more, it moves from being a practical problem into an actual theoretical problem with a deeper practical problem here. And of course, the problem here is, in half a second, is flexible wages make the depression worse. So I think you're all familiar with this, because you'd be all post-Keynesians, but as he says, it's the opposite of the case that flexible wages leads to solution to the depression. In fact, at another point, he says that actually workers resisting wage cuts will put off the depression, it'll halt that thing. And of course, we know that the current fear is deflation, being talked about again in the Financial Times yesterday, this fear of deflation. Now, what does this flexibility refer to? It refers to people making individual choices. We're back to the independent labourer. The condition of the independent labourer is not there. How do you secure that? You have to secure output as a whole. Once you secure output as a whole, as he puts it, the Manchester system comes into its own. We're back to the classical system, and that's the significance of the general theory. We secure output, we allow choice, we're securing the independent labourer, able to make their choices. We can now get out the fire exit when we wish. I'll stop there. Okay.